Hello there, and welcome to The High Ground, a doof bonus content show where we're sailing into Disney's Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm your captain, Elliot Diebold.
I'm your first mate, Georgia Diebold.
And I am, for the final time, the gross scallywag, Reuben Morehouse.
Oh, I'm going to miss that voice.
I forgot again that you do the accent.
Final time for now, because, of course, there are two more Pirates films currently in development.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
Although Pirates 6 has been in development for like
four or five years. Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to jump the gun a bit, jump with the flintlock, I guess.
The cannon.
Yeah, and let everyone know that this movie was in development hell for like 4 or 5 years. They rewrote the script a bunch of times, and it really shows, and that's going to be my thesis for this episode.
Yeah, well, actually, wait, yeah, so to start with, we can just go into sort of our overall thoughts. And I actually wanted to start that with a question for Georgia, specifically, because you are like a doctor in real life, Georgia. And that makes you a woman of science. So I thought, as a woman of science, you would be
best equipped
to tell us about this story, which includes another woman of science.
She does mention it once or twice.
That leads to one of my favorite parts of this movie, where she yells "ghosts" and runs away, yeah. Which is delightful.
It was very good.
Classic. Oh god, this movie. Oh. This is by far the worst, right? Like previous movie was good compared to this movie.
I really think. I liked the last one. Four. I liked this one better than the last one. Yeah, I agree.
No way. This one felt so, I don't know what it was. Like, the last one, we'll get into the specifics of this a bit more, I guess, but the last one to me was like, they actually had some cool ideas and they just failed to deliver on them, whereas this one just felt like they had no ideas left to me, except for some of the action set pieces, which were good. But it was just kind of like, oh, okay, let's get Keira Knightley back, but let's not have her say any words. Stuff like that, it was just kind of like, this feels like it's lost it.
I guess it depends on the angle you're coming at it from, because I think like 4 was a worse movie, but like as you said, there was like this glimmer of potential behind 4. Mm-hmm. Like the frustrating thing about watching Pirates 4, it was like, no, if you just did this differently, this would be a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Pirates 5 is kind of almost proudly and by design a shitty version of the first one.
Yeah.
And it's weird. I think this one comes together a bit better, but like because it tries to just sit next to Pirates 1 and be like, hey, remember that one? I'm trying to be as good. Mm-hmm. So I think like it actually comes together better. But I suppose if you're looking at them for what could this be, I agree that Pirates 4 had more potential.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that, but it is true.
I do think like I just enjoyed this as an experience watching a movie. I came out of Pirates 5 with a better impression than I did of 4.
Nah, even so, I disagree with that, but that's pretty specific and personal taste, so I guess we'll get into it.
So was there actually a question for me, or was it just to
as a woman of science, or a witch, I don't know what term you prefer.
Do you want to ask me about, what is it,
horticulture? Oh my god, that's a bad joke. Yeah, that's one of the other things about this movie, is like, so okay, let's, I'm going to pull back the curtain a bit. So, original films was all written by two people, Terry Rossio and someone else whose name I can't remember right now, because in my notes I don't have it, because he ditched. He wasn't involved with the development of this film. Only one of them was, Terry Rossio. But then Terry Rossio apparently didn't do a good enough job or whatever, because they brought in another person called Jeff Nathanson to completely rewrite the screenplay. I don't know what it is, but it's so, I know that other movies had parts that felt pretty like crude or crass, but it always
this
kind of
was
worked.
More crass.
This one really, yeah. And it really stunk. Like so yeah. many of these jokes really just stunk to high hell.
Jack was like a real pervert.
Yeah.
It was gross.
The horology joke goes on for like a solid minute. Like,
yeah. And then it came back. Yeah, and I was like, no, don't bring it back.
So to clarify, because obviously our audience hasn't seen this film, what we're talking about is there's a bit Nobody where has. Karina, a character that we will introduce momentarily, is, you know, talking about the stars, otherwise known as horology, the study of stars. But the pirates see, they hear whore-ology, and that's about 3 minutes of discussion, yeah. making fun of her for being a whore, basically. I mean, like, I feel bad saying it, but that's what the film is saying.
You're right. I do want to clarify, horology is actually the study of the like of time and like clocks and
making sorry, watches. Yeah, it is. And I think they. Get
I,
it right
I remember
the
that
film.
From
Maybe
Heroes because of Scylla.
Sure.
I think let's just move on from okay. that. But it's just abysmal. One of the jokes that I pulled out. There's a bit where they're talking about Barbossa, and Jack says something to the effect of, oh, he's got two balls but only one leg, no wonder he limps. And the movie just grinds to a halt for 5 seconds while everyone kind of looks around like, is this the kind of film we're in now? And then it keeps going.
Like even in the film there's like an awkward pause.
It's
in the movie.
It's so weirdly self-aware that they know it's terrible and yet it's in the film.
It's like Johnny Depp delivered the line and then everybody was like, they just kept filming and then they
That one's
going to
get cut, right? And then, you know,
nope.
They just keep rolling.
They've got no other takes. Okay, any other overarching thoughts or should we just dive in?
I mean, it was bad.
And on that note,
that's
let's get
summary,
in there. So we start with what we've come to expect from a pirates film, a dark, brooding opening scene. A young boy kind of goes out in a rowboat to sea and then tries to drown himself, but luckily he's saved by the Flying Dutchman, because Will Turner pops out. It turns out the young boy that we've been following is Henry Turner, his son, and they have a quick chat about potentially breaking Will's curse. Will tells him to fuck off and kind of leaves him back in the ocean, and then that's the end of that scene.
I thought it was a cool start. The image of this kid, because we don't really know what he's doing. He goes out in a boat, and then you see him tie something to his leg, and it's a bag of rocks, and he throws it overboard, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? It's a really cool start. I liked it.
Yeah, it was a really good start.
I liked it. When we talk about the next scene, I'll talk about my problems with it, but I agree. Like, it's a very great opener, because, yeah, you're like, it's very mysterious, and then like Will popping out of the ship, you're like, at least for me, I was like, oh shit, yes, like we're getting back to good pirates lore. Here's Will Turner.
Well, that's what I thought too, because like I hadn't seen this before, and after the last film I just assumed that they wouldn't really
they
ever
wouldn't
go back. To like Will or Lizzie, but they did, and I liked that.
I think it was very much like after Pirates 4 now, like the only way we're going to win people back is by trying to be like the old ones. But this must be the first Pirates film that's not using its, like, dark, edgy opening scene to, like, seed a mystery. Like, I guess it seeds, oh, we have to search for the Trident. But, like, all of the others, I feel like, usually leave you at the end of it being like, so what the fuck was that?
Yeah. That was cool, but how does it connect?
Yeah, like, this one is just actually delivering exposition. Like, this one clearly establishes the plot of Henry wants to save his dad, whereas the other ones would be like, people singing a song or like a ship blowing up. I'm not used to the opening dark scene being like, here is where we're going.
I mean, I like the dark bits. The bit, as soon as Will gets introduced, it kind of falls a bit flat because this movie really has a toxic addiction to exposition. and the young Henry is not like, I mean, he's a child actor, you know, but It wasn't good. It wasn't great in my mind.
It was kind of weird. Like, Will was just like, oh, well, like you said, he basically just told him to fuck off. Like, he wasn't even like, look, I'm so happy that you want to, like, save me. He's only seen this child once.
He was
basically like, get the hell out of here.
He's only seen this child once before, Georgia. So, like, yeah, I don't think they have any real affection for each other.
This is true.
Yeah, this was something I wanted to talk about. Will seems scared of his crew coming across Henry. Yeah. And I don't understand. Like, why?
Yeah, Will's the captain.
I thought that because he was doing the job that the Dutchman was supposed to of actually collecting all the dead souls, that he wasn't going to grow barnacles.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was ever said explicitly, or maybe I just assumed it.
It was pretty heavily
implied, yeah.
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 My thinking is, like, maybe he's scared of his crew because by letting his son go, he isn't doing the job, so they will all get a little bit more monstrous.
He's already drowned himself.
Pretty monstrous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, you have one or two bad days. Each lost soul is a new fresh barnacle. So I'm sure you can't be perfect all the time. So that's probably why.
Yeah. It's just a weird thing that Will's, like, seemingly scared of his crew and needs Henry to leave right away. And it's just not really addressed why he's suddenly in a really toxic dynamic with his crew. Like, Pirates 3 definitely left me with this idea of, like, well, you know, it's a shit job, but he's got his dad by his side and it's all good now.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So then we kind of cut from that opening scene to, like, the second opening scene that's also quite disconnected, because we jump 9 years ahead. Henry Turner is now, like, a young man, and he's working on a British ship, and he does, like, a bit of a treason because he notices the ship is about to sail into the Devil's Triangle. And he tries to get them to stop because he's actually a master of the myths of the sea. They don't listen to him because he introduces himself as somebody who is a master of the myths of the sea. So they sail into the Devil's Triangle. There's evil ghost pirates. They kill everyone except for Henry because they're like, hey, Henry, go tell Jack Sparrow some stuff.
Mm. Yeah. And I kind of liked the... So obviously Pirates of the Caribbean has always kind of been about parental relationships, right? Like, especially the second, third, and fourth movie and this one, it's all about a relationship between a child and their father, right? So I thought that was good. And I liked the vibe of young Turner having spent a lot of time studying myths and legends because, of course, he wanted to rescue his dad. Like, that makes sense. And I thought it was going to be fun, but his mystical knowledge never really comes back, right? Like, it's, I don't know. I was like, oh, this could be cool, but then it just never really, I don't know. It never really pays off, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
The only thing it really gets used for is to, like, set up the dynamic between him and Karina, because she likes science and he likes magic.
Magic, exactly.
And how could it work?
And that, I think that also is kind of cool if it
was done better.
If it had anything, like, there's never any moments where he's like, oh, I think we have to solve this using magic. And Karina's like, no, I think we have to solve it using science. And they come to blows and learn to work together or whatever. That, you kind of would expect something like that to happen, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
Just, like, nothing. It never, I don't know. It's like they had the two-sentence character summaries, but they never worked them into the actual plot.
I think instead they more just, like, kind of, like, have a little bit of a go at each other all the time about how, you know, then they're always fighting about that thing where it's like, oh, so you were right or I was right or whatever. And it just seems, like, really toxic.
Yeah.
Like, this is a horrible relationship. There's one point where she basically just, like, totally shuts him down and he goes, oh, I'm going to go over here to this other part of the ship. And then she says something like, okay, like, you know, but I was right, and just has this smug look on her face. And I just thought, that's the worst. This is so toxic.
Yeah, I feel like it's a relationship that worked in their heads and just didn't end up getting the time it needed in the movie to actually work on screen.
Yeah.
There's this one moment that really demonstrates that to me where Salazar grabs Henry and, like, takes him for a brief period. And Karina's like, oh my god, they've got Henry, we have to save him, blah, blah, blah. And I was just kind of like, oh, do you care about that?
Yeah.
Why do you care? I mean,
and I was
she didn't seem to care
5 minutes ago. Yeah.
Also, Salazar, the villain that we meet here, his boat eats other boats. That's kind of weird, right? Like, his boat. So, okay. So in the previous movie, you had Blackbeard, whose boat shoots out flames. And I was like, okay, that's cool, but weird. This one is really weird because what it does is, like, the boat kind of, like, the front half of it lifts up and then just kind of like slams down and like eats the other boat that it is destroying. It was really strange.
Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the like tanks that on the Day of Black Sun in Avatar.
Yes, they have, the centipede same thing. Tanks. Yeah,
it reminded me so much of those.
Yeah, it's weird.
I feel like, because I was like, I saw it eating other ships and I was like, this is really cool, but for some reason it just doesn't feel as cool as it should be. Like, it was this weird thing where I was like, yeah, this looks a little bit lame, but the idea of a ship that eats other ships feels really cool. And I don't know what it was about, like the visuals or something, but it just looks a bit more awkward than it should.
Some of it looked good. Like, there's a few shots throughout the film where the people on the ship that's being eaten are kind of looking up and you see this boat that's kind of like sailing towards them and then starts rising up and like growing in the sky above them as it's about to kind of crush them. And you're like, oh shit, this looks cool. But then sometimes you see it from the side and it just, it looks like one centipede about to start having sex with another centipede. And it just looks weird and not good.
I feel like it's a cool idea. It just didn't work out, which I guess is kind of a lot of this movie.
Yeah, definitely.
My thing here is, so basically this scene sets up basically the other half of the story, which is Henry meets Salazar. We establish Salazar as the villain, and Salazar tells Henry to go and actually find Jack, which he was already kind of doing. And I guess all I'm thinking is just, I don't understand why we had both of these scenes. Like, there's kind of two, like, prologue scenes. It almost feels like there's prologue one, then prologue two, and then the next scene we're about to get into is, like, chapter one. And I think you could merge these scenes pretty easily. Like, realistically, because it's not, it's barely explained how Henry got out of this place in the middle of the ocean off of a ship that was, like, burnt down. And it's like, okay, what if we just moved the second one, the first scene into this one. So it's just like, after Henry is let go by Salazar, he just drowns, but then Will picks him up and is like, oh, I'll send you to this place instead. I won't take you. And then you get like all the stuff.
Yeah, that might have been a bit better.
You definitely could.
But then you wouldn't have a kid, because remember, most of the creepy start sequences have included a child.
That's true. It's a tradition. You need a child.
Yeah, it just feels like one of these rewrite things to me, where like they had both of those scenes and they just sort of put them both one after the other. Like,
yeah, instead of being like, oh, we need to pick one, like they just kind of all combine them. Yeah, they just ended up sticking both of them in.
Just like this is a bit of a theme for our Pirates coverage has been, you know, you could easily cut half an hour out of this film and it would still be just as good. And to me, this is part of that, is like, this is 10 minutes altogether. It's 2 5-minute scenes. I reckon you could do it as 1 6-minute scene and still get everything it needs in it. So then we move on to the unveiling of a cool new bank in some town on an island somewhere. They reveal this fancy new vault in the bank and they open it up, and Jack is already drunkenly asleep in there because he's planning to steal the vault. Things go a bit sideways and he and his crew end up stealing the entire building. There's a really cool chase scene around the town as the police and Jack are trying to keep up with a whole building moving through the town. It's actually quite fun. And we actually meet Karina here.
Yeah, this is a fun action scene. I mean, like, obviously very silly.
Yeah.
I feel like they're getting sillier and sillier while staying just about the same amount of fun, these action scenes. But yeah, I thought it was good. There's this bit where they reveal like this is an uncrackable vault, and the door swings open and Jack is just sitting in there. And that's never explained, but it's kind of perfect that just like,
yeah,
he's just in there drunk and you're just kind of like, oh, this is
weird. Oh, and he's not alone either. He has the like governor or someone's wife with him.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah, that was a bit weird. That did kind of... Okay, wait, yeah, because I have to get into this as well. That's another example of, like, the weirdness about the characters in this film. So,
yeah,
this movie is set, like, what, 18 or so years after the previous one, right?
After Pirates 3. I assume it's only, like 8 or 9 after Pirates 4, which was, like, 10 years after
That's
Pirates
true. 3. That's true. But, like, obviously, the vibe that they're going for is like, okay, it's kind of the twilight days of pirates, right? Like, things are starting to,
yeah,
you know, piracy is starting to really be a whatever, persecuted group or whatever, right? And so because of that, there's a lot of choices they make where, for things like Jack's crew is kind of sick of him and hates him and stuff like that. And you're kind of like, okay, that's kind of cool. But it leads to all the characters feeling really kind of old in a weird way. Like, Jack feels old and it makes him just not as entertaining to watch. Like, when he's in the vault, he's drunk and clearly not in a good space. And he's, like, slurring a ton and, like, and then he does some of these, like, you know, in air quotes, classic Jack antics. But because his character feels a bit more like a grandpa who's kind of trying to do these things, it just, I don't know, it didn't land for me as much. It felt like it spoiled the character a bit.
I had the opposite kind of thing where I felt like the problem was is that he hadn't changed. It was still just meant to be the same old Jack.
Mm.
And I felt like nothing had really changed. And that was kind of what frustrated me was, like, they set up in the first half, it felt like we had this character arc of, like, Jack was washed up and was living in the past.
Yeah.
And I almost wanted to see, like, a bit of a character arc for him in this movie of, like finding a new place for himself.
Mm.
And they don't do that. He just kind of gets what he wants. He kind of
regains his former glory. Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't satisfying, for sure.
But, like, in terms of, like, this action scene, like, I felt like pure, like, sort of not quite pinnacle, but, like, you know, very high quality Jack Sparrow antics. Like, there's that great bit where him and Karina sort of meet up and they're, like, charging through trying to follow this bank as it's being drawn by horses through the town. And Karina says to him, like, I'm not looking for trouble. And he just sort of turns to her and is like, what a horrible way to live. And I just little lines like that. And I thought the bank vault thing with, like, him having a woman in there, that was, like, classic. Like, that's the exact sort of dumb shit he would have been doing in the first three. So I thought it was all fine. It's then later they really start to hammer into you that it's like, yes, he's still trying to do this stuff and it's not working anymore.
Yeah, they probably needed to pick one of those things, like either have him already have progressed and so he's not the same Jack that we left and he's a bit different, or have him actually progress during the movie. But instead, yeah, it was like, it was weird how he was exactly the same. I was like, this has been like 20 years. Pages.
Or,
like,
that's fine if they just don't challenge it, but they like start a character arc for him in that everything's falling apart and then it just doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, like they bring it up, but then they just sort of leave it there.
Like if he was just the same and there wasn't this whole angle of, oh, he's run out of his luck or whatever, it would be fine. Like, because you'd just be like, oh, same old Jack. Maybe it doesn't work because Johnny Depp is older or whatever. But yeah, it's the fact that they bring it up, and because what they do is they bring it up so that he has to give away the compass, but like they tie it into the plot and then just ignore it from a character perspective, which is why, you know, it falls flat. Like, you know, what this film is really missing is that character politics stuff we talked about in the first three so much. And this is a prime example.
You're right. As soon as he gives away the compass, it's like that part's over. We don't need that anymore. Let's get on with it kind of vibes.
Especially because Jack's character arc in like movies 2, 3, and 4, in all of those, he was looking for a way to be immortal.
Mm.
So it's just bizarre that you'd almost start a character arc of this guy is past his prime and needs to start to accept that he's too old for this shit. Because that's perfect for a guy who spent most of the series trying to be immortal, like accepting his mortality, basically. God, now I'm making myself angry. I could have done this better. Like, even in movie one, his plot arc was, I want my ship back, because he was trying to recapture his glory days as captain. Mm. Like, it's right there.
yeah. It doesn't quite, none of the stuff like that quite lands, does it?
I just want to say, I really enjoyed this action scene. It reminded me of the one Fast and Furious thing I've seen where they, like, carry a vault through Brazil. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure what you're referring to.
It's basically the same thing. They've got one of their cars and it's got like a giant bank vault or something on the back and it's going through the city and it does that same broken physics where when they turn corners, it just like tears up bits of the road and like the edge of houses, but still follows them and doesn't like drag the car around. So like the same nonsense physics, but it was like, it's fun. So you're like, oh, who cares?
Yeah, totally. When this scene started, I was like, oh, come on. But then you kind of get into it and you're like, yeah, sure. Horses can drift a bank vault around a corner like that. Why not?
Also, like, how many horses do you think it would take to pull a whole building?
It we saw it only take six.
I can't remember how many there were, but I remember thinking it would probably maybe be more than what they had.
If it takes 12 reindeers to just pull one sleigh, it's got to take at least like 80 horses to pull.
No, but reindeers are like really weak.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, but like it's an interesting contrast to the fourth movie where I feel like our complaint was the opposite. Like I'm remembering the bits of the fourth movie with like the ship on the hill that was like tilting and like the bits in the coconut trees. Like those parts of those were arguably less stupid and they still bugged me more because they weren't used well, whereas this one is stupid, but they have so much fun with it and do interesting things that you're just like, I don't give a shit. Like this is great.
Yeah, yeah, it was still fun, yeah.
Like it, like you will be so much more forgiving if it's fun. Like, yeah, actually, like there's a nonsense part. Jack is just walking around and somehow keeps ending up back in front of the bank. Like, what the hell route was Gibbs taking?
He knew all the shortcuts, okay? Yeah.
But like again, it was just like, I didn't care. Like, at the time, I thought that and I was like, oh, who cares? It's funner this way. So yeah, after we sort of empty out the bank and all that, Jack's crew quits because by the time they get the vault to the ship, it's empty. So then he goes out on a drunken rampage and him and Karina, are both captured. We haven't properly introduced Karina. We'll do that in a sec. Anyway, we get basically the next half hour of the movie is just various exposition scenes as characters go in and out of jail and just talk to each other. But Jack ultimately gets drunk and he like gives away his compass, which lets Salazar out of his prison. And that really kicks the plot off after 45 minutes.
It's sort of explained how the compass leads to Salazar.
No, it's not. Don't defend this movie.
It's not. Yeah. Like they give an explanation, but it's really dumb and doesn't really work.
Makes sense. Yeah.
You can tell that the compass and its relationship to Salazar is something that went through a number of rewrites because they're intimately intertwined while also having nothing to do with each other.
Yeah. Like
Jack 100%. Got the compass the first time he fought Salazar, didn't actually use it to win the battle.
No, he did because it pointed towards where he went to take him out. Like, but that's the compass didn't have any magical additional powers against Salazar. It just did the thing that it always does.
It was just also there. And then I think they tried to say something like that if you betray the compass, what happens is the thing that you're most afraid of is released. And I was like, that's so...
What does that mean?
Yeah, that's so vague.
That actually has nothing to do with Salazar. And, like, Jack just got the compass from a dying dude. It's like they almost introduced, because the compass was like the one thing he had in Pirates 1.
Mm.
So it's like they're almost setting up this really cool origin story for like, this is how he got the compass. Like, and I have to think in the original draft, he got the compass in the Devil's Triangle.
Mm.
But like it just ended up not being tied to it. And it's just really confusing. Like Salazar and the compass are tied together in a bunch of ways, but also distinctly not tied together in the ways that matter. It's really weird.
It kind of is sad that this compass, which effectively just points at whatever the writers want it to, hasn't, for the past four movies, felt like a cheap plot device. But it really does in this one.
But not for being the
compass. But not for being a compass that just points where the writers want it. And it's literally a thing that can be used to get a character from point A to point B with no justification.
Yeah, but they don't even use it for that. It's a different kind of plot device. It's this thing that Jack has that relates to Salazar.
For some reason, it breaks the curse on Salazar and his crew, or untraps them, and it just...
It makes
why?
Sense, yeah.
And how come they even turned into ghosts in the first place, whereas nobody else who got
in their deed? There's so many holes. When their ship crashed, there was red glowing, and that makes ghosts, okay? And when you sell your compass for an alcohol, it breaks a mountain, and that lets ghosts out. Everyone knows this stuff.
If the compass had been found in the Devil's Triangle, it would have been fine.
Jack had to make some kind of deal with the devil-esque thing to get the compass and trap Salazar, or like, I don't know.
Not even that good options that are better than what they did.
My ideas don't even have to be bulletproof to be significantly better than what the movie did.
I just want to call out one other bit, because this is the kind of the part of the movie where Karina and Henry meet and have a conversation in a hospital, and it's the heaviest exposition conversation that I've ever seen in my life. Like, Karina spends about 10 minutes just spouting tropes of exposition. Like, she talks about a blood moon. She talks about the Journal of Galileo Galilei, and that never really comes into it at all.
That was so good. It just got totally left there and, like never brought up again.
Cool, yeah. She's like, oh, my father, like, left these clues for me about this stuff. Like, she gives like 5 or 6 different like terrible tropes of exposition all in one scene. It's ridiculous.
While mixing in her other trope, which is that she's not a witch, she's a woman of science.
She's a woman of science, of course, yeah. And no one seems to, I mean, like, is it just that she's a smart woman? Anytime she says something even like slightly smart, all the men around her pull their guns on her and are like, witch, witch.
Which is weird because that's never been a thing before in this universe. Like, is it a new fad or something? Because nobody ever did that to, like,
Elizabeth,
Lizzie or anybody else.
Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth didn't do science. She just did, like, cool pirate shit, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe it's because this chick is so bloody obnoxious about it, too. Like, she's always like, oh, everybody else is really dumb, but, like, I'm really smart because I'm a woman of science. And it's like, maybe if you weren't such an asshole about it, people wouldn't threaten to shoot you every time. Like,
God, here comes Karina. She's so annoying. Hey, what if we just said she was a witch? Like, would that work?
And then just yelled that and then just pointed a gun at her and just shot her.
It was like one of those things. Somebody started it, then everyone else is like, I mean, she is really annoying.
It's actually just a joke that everybody's playing on it and trying to make her shut up.
So, yeah, I guess with the compass giving away as well, just a random idea I've just had, they should have just said, hey, Will's going to kill Jack if he ever gets out of the curse. And then if Jack gives away the compass, Will gets out of the curse and he just has to come and kill Jack. So it's a win-win.
I don't get that. But anything would be better, so I'm sure it would work.
Okay. Never mind. Okay, so next, as all that exposition sort of comes to an end, we check in on Barbossa, who is living at large, having taken over Blackbeard's empire at the end of the 4th movie. But as Salazar has been released now, Salazar started like taking back the sea and killing all of his ships. So Barbossa goes to get help from a witch.
It's again, just so great to see Barbossa again. He's just still amazing. Jeffrey Rush is still so great. And I still can't poke any flaws in his amazing acting and just his whole presence as Barbossa.
Or even still like so Barbossa good. Once again manages to have like a semi-coherent character arc amongst a bunch of duds.
Yep. Because it's not actually any better, but just his acting makes you so much more invested in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good. Although he doesn't get his apple in this movie for some reason.
He's sitting in his fancy throne room and he's eating Turkish delight. And I was like, what the fuck is that?
And Salazar eats an apple in this film. Like, there's a scene where Salazar takes a bite out of an apple.
There is too.
There was a Reddit, a thing on Reddit the other day that was an article on why are baddies always eating apples? Because it's like a bit of a thing. So they had like a bunch of examples. So they had, apparently. Because like in Loki, the sort of baddie at the end, he's not eating an apple, but it's like an apple-like thing. I think that's how it came up. And then there was like
it's not an apple. It's a fluff fruit so that you don't hurt the Pokemon. Yeah, fluff fruit.
Because you don't want to hurt the Pokemons. pegging apples at them. even though I spent my whole childhood doing that. And they had like Draco Malfoy as well and... Oh, God, there was, like, a whole bunch of them. And, you know, I was like, oh, this could be interesting. It wasn't very interesting. It was just one of those shitty, like, articles. But they did mention, they were like, oh, the obvious comparison is with, like, you know, the apple from the Bible, like Adam and Eve type thing, and that it's, like, something that maybe that has something to do with baddies that seemed a bit loose. But the main ones are like, oh, it just shows because apples make a big crunch when you eat them. And if you're eating, it's just a way of the baddies showing the goodies that they couldn't give a shit what they're saying. I was like, that's probably more it.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, like the biblical reference is good, but I think it worked best for Barbossa. And he's got such a, I don't know, like a clear love of like hedonism, I suppose. It just worked much better for him than for Salazar, who's quite a kind of straight military man type of vibe.
It sort of felt like he came out, like, I distinctly remember thinking, oh, he has an apple. Like, where did that come from? What, and did he even eat? He's a ghost.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it made no sense. Because the whole thing with Barbossa was that when he was sort of, like, dead, that he couldn't eat. And so then here's this guy just chowing down on apples as a ghost. It's like, oh, well, how come he gets to eat when he's dead?
Just, yeah, I mean, no Barbossa apple. I'm siding over to Ruben's end now. Like, worst movie.
This bald witch as well is another thing of, like, feels like it's there from a previous script draft and doesn't really make sense in this version of the film, because she's only in this one scene, and she's like, her hovel or whatever is like really lovingly designed and her character design is really cool, and she somehow got the compass and gives it to Barbossa, and you're just kind of like, wow, who is this character? I hope I get more of them. And then you never do, ever. They're in one scene.
Yeah, and I love, he's like, how did you get that? And she's just like, I have my ways. I was like, oh, fuck off.
That to me was shit because writing. Always in these films, it's been like there have been like contrivances of how this thing got all the way over there, but it always has kind of tracked and made sense. Whereas in this one, it was just like the bald witch, bought it from this random barkeeper? I don't know.
Yeah. But there was usually, like sensible nonsense, I guess.
Yes.
Like, oh, yeah, the dead monkey swam across the ocean and got it. And it's like, sure, why not? Dead monkeys can do that. I don't give a shit.
I didn't even try.
She is in one other scene because the British Empire pulls her in for a little bit to look at star charts because she's a witch. I agree.
A woman of science?
They dressed her up and made her look really cool. And then just like, she's only in like 1.5 scenes. And it was like, oh, this just really feels like discount white Tia Dharma.
Yeah,
100%.
So Henry rescues Karina and Jack as they're about to be executed because somehow he got Jack's crew on board when he met them. With everyone rescued, the group all sail for the Trident. So Henry, Karina, and Jack have all sort of teamed up to get the Trident for reasons of their own.
I did love how the rescue scene started with him. He swings down there and then he just kind of achieves absolutely nothing. Yeah. And you just sit there and think, wow, like he's not taking after his parents or something. And then it turns out he's just a diversion and it sort of works.
Yeah.
But I did like that start because my first thought was just like, wow, wow, wow.
And again, this is another very good scene. Both of the action scenes in this village are phenomenal. Like, Jack walking around with the ends of the guillotine still stuck to him trying to get out.
The bit where he's swinging around on the, like that. So there's this bit where he's on a guillotine about to get executed. It gets shot and the guillotine basically just starts kind of like swinging around and around. And as it turns upside down, the guillotine falls away from him. And as it gets right side up, it falls back towards him, and so the blade of his guillotine is like sliding back and forth, up and down. It's hilarious. It's such a brilliant little moment. I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah, I agree.
That was really good.
Yeah, and you get the camera at the top. Oh, so good.
Going back a little bit, I love when Karina was trying to like calling everybody like an idiot and trying to get in her final words, and Jack just keeps interrupting her. It's really funny.
Which I think at one point they're meant to imply is just a delaying tactic from him, but like I don't know if that actually came across. No, but it just for most of it just feels like bickering.
Trolling her.
Yeah,
like she's doing the final words of Karina Smith, and he's just like, "Meh." It's hilarious.
Basically, with all the goodies sailing off together, Barbossa just goes out and meets up with Salazar, and they cut a deal to have Salazar lead him to Jack because Salazar was trapped by Jack and wants revenge. And this is when Salazar like tells us his origin story, and we've touched on it a lot. Basically, Salazar was like the pirate slayer, and Jack beat him and tricked him into sailing into the Devil's Triangle. And so then now Salazar like hates him and wants to kill him. So just as Salazar and Barbossa catch up, there's like this great chase scene with some ghost sharks, but the goodies just make it to land in time.
Mind his backstory, like the concept of him being a pirate Hunter. I quite liked that. It didn't make a whole lot of sense why he was okay to work with Bubba. So I guess he was now so much more invested in getting revenge on Jack that he didn't really care.
Well, and wasn't he going to betray Barbossa anyway? Don't they sort of touch on that later?
Yeah, like, I think
he was like willing to use him, but yeah, it helps sell how tenuous their alliance is. That yeah, he's like the pirate slayer.
He spends the whole time talking to Barbossa, telling him how much he fucking hates pirates. Like, okay,
I do want to celebrate Salazar a bit because this was the part Javier Bardem was the person I was most excited to see in a pirates movie because of No Country for Old Men, where he's a fucking crazy character. And he delivers so well. You get this vibe of just like completely unhinged kind of lunatic vibes. Like he's got a clear goal, but also he's just creepy and weird in some really satisfying ways. I thought it was wonderful.
And in the flashback, you feel how he's not that. Like in the flashback, he comes across as... Yeah. Like this really well put together, like guy who hunts pirates and is like all about, you know, working for the crown and all that shit.
Yeah.
Like he comes across as really put together. And then you see how like presumably 30 odd years of being a ghost in the dark has driven him insane.
Yeah. He's got this like wet kind of worm tongue sliminess. That's really great.
Yeah.
I like when he talks and he's like getting really into it and he sort of clenches his teeth and then all this just black, like spittle, fluid just comes out of his mouth.
Oh, so,
so gross.
And the like the wet hair effect is just awesome. Like the fact that it looks like he's underwater.
The floating hair. Yeah. So good.
I did like that.
Like, yeah, it looks just like Julie's hair in The Expanse.
Yeah. Sure.
I think it looks like the Aquaman movie.
we should while we're on this flashback bit, I just want to also call out, we didn't mention this, but Henry looks so much like Orlando Bloom that you can immediately tell he's Orlando Bloom's son.
He really looks like the offspring of those two.
Right.
Yeah,
and
he does.
The person they cast for young Jack Sparrow, I thought at first it was like that digital de-aging like they did for Samuel L. Jackson in Captain Marvel because how similar young Sparrow looked to regular Johnny Depp. But I was thinking it's just some... No, it's just some actor, like just legit, really? Is like somebody that looks really a lot like a young Jack Sparrow. It was legitimately very good.
They must have done a little bit of CGI over the top, though. He looks so much like him.
I mean, like, and practical makeup and stuff to blend it, but legit. You can look up the person who played it and you're like, oh shit, kind of does look like a young Jack Sparrow.
Well, I'm totally looking that up. Yeah, I just assumed I was going to say, oh, that de-aging stuff was really well done. Like he looked really good.
Yeah, no shit, that's a different guy. Yeah, I assumed it was digital de-aging.
Folks at home is Anthony Della Torre, but you look up pictures of him and you're just like, shit, this looks like a young Jack Sparrow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they it looks like they did touch it up a little bit with CGI, but obviously, yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
While we're talking about Henry, just a fun fact. This is an Australian actor whose name, I've forgotten it. But he was in I think Home and Away, which is an Australian soap opera. Oh, Brendan Thwaites, that's his name. Fun fact for everyone at home, this is the same person who plays Nightwing in the Teen Titans, like Titans, the show that the Teen Titans reboot, the one that had that famous scene where Nightwing says "fuck Batman" and everyone loves it. The same guy. There you go. Fun fact.
Ruben spent like the last month and a half trying to get me to watch Titans, so I'm assuming this is just part of that campaign.
Did I? No, you're thinking of Doom Patrol. Titans was okay.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That shows how on top of it I am.
I kept thinking after you posted that, I thought, oh gosh, the girl, like Karina looks so familiar as well. And I looked her up and like the only things she's been in was like Maze Runner and some version of Wuthering Heights that I probably watched, both of which I would have only seen twice, like once each. This is like, she looks so familiar. I don't even think I watched the whole Maze Runner movie.
Was she in any?
I swear she was in something else.
I watched Maze Runner on a plane. It's very forgettable. But now that you've said that, I'm totally like, oh yeah, she was the main girl in that.
So speaking of other production fun facts, this is going to get very Australian and specific, but this film was filmed on the Gold Coast. They got a lot of like tax incentives from the Aussie government here to film.
Of course.
And just as a fun fact, there's a bit where they're in the, like they've slid down the water slide after the Red Sea has parted. We'll get to this a bit later, listeners. But Penny, my partner, who is a big fan of the Australian TV show, or was when she was younger, H2O Just Add Water, which is Aussie TV show that was also, I think, filmed on the Gold Coast. Penny was like, hey, that looks like the Marco Island Cave from H2O Just Add Water. And then later we found out it was filmed on the Gold Coast. And Penny was like, all right, I bet they like shared sets or something like that. I don't know if they did end up doing that, but I'm sure they shared at least some production crew or something. Just thought that was a good pull that was worth bringing up and giving some props.
Because I did think of H2O Just Add Water a lot in the last film with the like crappy mermaid costumes.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So, sorry, just to explain this to people who are not Australians, H2O Just Add Water was like one of those shitty afternoon kids shows where it was like there were three girls.
Yeah.
And when they went into water, they turned into mermaids.
Not when they went into water, when they got wet at all. Like when their skin gets wet, they would just kind of fall over.
It's a hilarious concept, actually. Magic
powers, like water bending powers.
Aside one of them could like one of them could like freeze water, and one of them could like just sort of boil water, which seemed like very much less useful.
This is the funniest thing about that show is there are three of them, and so one of them had like water bending powers. One of them could freeze water, and one of them could like boil water or something. And so they would often have bits where like one of them would raise up a little ball of water. One of them would freeze it, and then would like punch it to like shoot a shard of ice at somebody. And it's just, it's really the like Avatar: The Last Airbender movie level version of waterbending. I thought was really funny, just how slow and awkward it looks.
I just seem to remember that like the one who could heat up water, basically that power mostly got used to like quickly dry them off when they didn't want to be mermaids anymore. Like if somebody accidentally got wet, and they'd be like, oh shit. And then she'd just be like, and then just sort of evaporate all the water off them, and they turn into a person again. It's like, wow. So you're just, your power is just the bailout power, basically.
Okay. I'm going to drop a really dank reference on you all now. Because talking about H2O, Just Add Water, has made me remember a way, way better mermaidy show on Australian TV. Do you guys remember Ocean Girl?
Ocean Girl, of course. And she had the whale Ocean friend. Girl. Her best friend was a whale. And she lived in a tree, though, which was confusing.
Oh, wait, I do know this.
Yeah, and she had the pyramid under the ocean because she could swim underwater, which doesn't sound as impressive as it was. Like, she could swim real deep underwater, I mean.
And she was like one of those classic, like a Teal'c from Stargate. Like, she was super robotic, and there was always, like, some guy pining after her, and she'd just be like, oh, I need to go talk to the whale and just like dive into the water. And he'd be like, oh man, it was a great show.
Now,
I'm just looking it up now. It ran for 4 seasons and has 78 episodes. I was going to try and rewatch it to like rewatch my childhood. That's too many.
That's a lot.
How many is that per season? That's a lot of episodes.
While we're talking about Aussie TV shows, I know I've brought this one up before and Elliot doesn't remember it, but I'm just going to use it as a chance to ask you, Georgia, and any other of our Australian listeners. Do you remember a TV show called Parallax? Do you remember this one, Georgia?
Oh, Parallax.
It was about this kid who found a way to travel to alternate dimensions, and his like parents had gone missing in these alternate dimensions and stuff. And so he basically goes around meeting alternate dimension versions of himself and his parents and like villains and stuff.
Whoa, no, I don't remember that. It sounds all right.
I remember it being kind of sounds really like good.
Loki, but.
Yeah, it was the Loki of its day for Australian children.
No, it sounds like you know, there were a bunch of other ones. Like there was an animated one I can't remember the name of. There was like Sliders. Like I watched a lot of alternate reality hopping shows growing up. I just had never heard of this one.
I think you'd like it, Elliot, unironically. But maybe you're a bit old for it now. But I still think you'd probably like it. It's effectively Stargate for, you know, young teenagers. Yeah.
What about do you remember the Ace Lightning show?
Oh, that name rings a bell, but I have no idea. It was the one where it had the
CGI guy who shot lightning because he'd escaped from a video game and the bad guys lived in a carnival.
I do remember this. Oh, I do not remember that. Carnival. Ace Lightning, and it's like he's like 3D, like early 3D animation. character.
I think it was ABC's like first CGI show, because I remember they kept going on about it.
God.
Anyway, sorry. This is just
actually Ace Lightning. Now that's a blast from the past, Elliot. That's legit. That's a deep one. And his villain, his enemy, Lord Fear. I'm on the Ace Lightning wiki right now.
It's a skeleton, right? A skeleton.
Yeah, it's kind of Skeletor-esque. Ace was sent to apprehend Lord Fear.
Even looking at it, that does not look familiar to me. I don't think I ever saw this one.
No, we absolutely had that on in our household as kids.
Wow.
We should get back to pirates.
Abilities can fire lightning from his wrist cannons. Weakness: must recharge the power when weak. Unstable human emotions in second season. What does that mean? He's got unstable human emotions.
I have here the cover for a PlayStation 2 game based on him.
Okay, yeah, I was just reading about that, actually.
Hold on. Lord Fear, here's his stats from the wiki. Gender: male. Age: 352. Abilities: extendable limbs, very intelligent, sorcery. Does his three abilities. Why does
listed in order of importance? Yeah,
why does extendable limbs get top billing?
Oh god, yeah, okay. I found the theme song for it as well. What a banger!
His assistant, he's got a staff. Lord Fear does, a staff with a toad on it, like a winged toad at the top. And apparently that staff's name is Staffhead. So the picture of Lord Fear, the caption is Lord Fear and Staffhead. It's just him holding his toad staff. Oh, good shit.
Okay. I'm probably going to go and try and rewatch some Ace Lightning and some Ocean Girl now, but let's get back to pirates. We do need to finish talking about Pirates 5.
Now.
So, okay, now I can see Ruben's about to post some shit in our doc. Here we go. Oh, yeah.
That's a picture of Lord Fear and Toadhead, whatever it was, Staffhead.
That brings back memories.
Anyway, sorry.
Okay, yes. God, so where were we? Oh, yeah, so we were talking about the flashback. And I just want to say, I really like the little detail here that Jack Sparrow, like we learned the origin of the Sparrow nickname for him.
Did you like, I don't know, that felt a little weird to me.
It felt like the Han Solo thing where it's like, yeah. It could have just been his name.
I like that bit in Han Solo too.
Oh, what is wrong with you? So shitty.
Han what? I don't know. Oh, but well, you're by yourself, so I'll just call you Han Solo. It's just so clunky.
Dumb.
Yeah, but it's a stupid name, so it deserves a stupid origin. But
every single name in Star Wars is stupid. Like, yeah, they all have
stupid origins.
Like, it's still not as bad as Rey who? Rey Skywalker. Although I do love the memes for that.
No, that is a good meme. But what it would be like is if it was like, my name's Rey. Rey who? Oh, I don't know. Well, I can see you're kind of walking over there where it looks like you're walking on the clouds. Oh, I know what I'll call you. Rey Skywalker. The name's Elon. Oh, Elon what? Oh, I don't have a last name. Well, you kind of look like a bit of a sleaze bag, so I'll call you Elon Sleaze Bagano.
Yeah. But Ruben, you're pretending that like real life surnames aren't that stupid.
No, I know, but it just is so stupid.
Like George Bro's surname, it's just...
But you would just give it to someone. Like, if Ray's standing there by herself on the sand, she could have just been like, oh, you're Ray Solo. Like, it's just everybody who's by themselves for 5 seconds without a name suddenly.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if they ask for one, Georgia, this isn't Pirates 4 rules, okay?
Yeah,
he didn't ask one. He just went, oh, I don't know. I don't have a last name. He's like, I'm giving you one.
Well, he is equivalent to in Pirates 4 when he just names her Sarina, like out of nothing.
Yeah. Oh, what a moment that was.
That was a good moment.
God, that was so good. I forgot about that.
God, that was
a shit movie.
Last thoughts on the flashbacks. Like, it introduces the idea of tributes, which Jack was suddenly obsessed with in this film. Doesn't take that anywhere. That's a bummer. Same with his hat. Any more thoughts?
Yeah, I did. I mean, those didn't have a whole lot of significance, sort of, but at the same time, I was like, I guess that's the moment where he became a captain.
Yeah, like, that's the high he's chasing.
Yeah, yeah. Although, I don't know if they made that super explicitly clear. But yeah, it was cool. I liked that.
Yeah, and they didn't. There was no end point for it. Yeah. But that just ties into Jack's whole thing not having an endpoint.
It was a cool moment when he does the, like, he tricks Salazar, basically. He lures him into chasing him and then does a anchor pull turn kind of thing to, you know, quickly turn his ship around some rocks and Salazar can't react in time. And
I liked the bit where they kind of had him, like, sort of just slow-mo, like, sauntering along his deck. It was, like, twirling the compass and just giving him the, like, little stink eye. I was like, man, he looks really cool right there.
Yeah, it was good.
Sorry, I want to say some of my other thoughts on Solo clarifying dumb shit, but we'll save that for when we do a Solo episode.
Yeah, it's happening.
Yeah, okay, so basically the goodies have crash-landed on this island. The ghosts can't walk on there, so they send Barbossa. There's this super gross wedding scene tied in that basically doesn't need to be there, but in it we establish that Barbossa wants to work with Jack and wants to get the trident because he doesn't trust Salazar, which is fair. So they bring the pearl back to life because Jack's been carrying it in a jar for 10 years and they chuck a runner trying to get to the trident.
Yeah, the wedding scene was just why?
It's bad, right? It's really bad. It's completely unnecessary, which is like, and it feels really mean. Like,
oh, it's just offensive, yeah.
It's just offensive. It's like, it's basically just 5 minutes or so of Jack making fun of a woman's appearance.
Yeah.
And it's that's really, exactly what it is. I don't
the
know
joke
what,
for the whole 5 minutes is that she's ugly. Yeah. That's all it is. Yeah.
And it's just, and like, it's not, it's so irrelevant as well because you think it's going to have some relevance, but then Barbossa just shows up and shoots a bunch of people and then we move on and it has no relevance. It was clearly just added because the screenwriter, who I'm going to name, his name is Jeff Nathanson. Is that right, Jeff? I'm looking it up.
It sounds like there were like six people who had a crack at
But Jeff Nathanson.
Whoever was the last one to leave it in.
Yeah. His name is on the script, and so he gets the blame.
Yeah,
fair. It just feels like they thought, oh, we haven't had a joke scene in long enough. Let's put one in, and this is what Jeff Nathanson thought people would find funny. And it's horrible. It's horrifying.
Yeah,
I think as well it's like it's one in a line of like sort of pretty sexist like humor in this film. Like there's the whole thing of like, you know, Jack Sparrow like having fucked that guy's wife and then, you know, the whole whore thing.
Yeah.
And like a lot of the humor is like a bit dated, even though this movie didn't come out that long ago. Like there's a lot of kind of a little bit like sexist sort of stuff in here. And even just the whole thing of it being so outrageous that Karina's a woman of science, and it's supposed to be such a novelty, it's like, who cares?
It's just a weird hill they've suddenly decided people need to die on in this movie, despite it not being a hill in any of the others.
Yeah.
It's just weird because it comes out of nowhere. I will continue to defend the in-characterness of Jack, like having had sex with that governor person's wife or whatever.
Well, that's what I mean. That by itself, it's not like I didn't actually mind that one. But then when it's like in this long line of them, it starts to kind of be like, oh, why is every joke in this movie just like a joke about a woman's like appearance or, you know, joking about how, you know, women can also have sex? And that's felt like that was the majority of the humor in the film.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, so, okay, moving on from...
Oh, wait, sorry. While we're on the island, just one other thing, which is there's a moment where they get caught in, like, these net traps, and for a moment I thought they were back on the cannibal island, and I was like, oh, we get to go back. That's going to be so fun. And then it's just, like, this atrocious thing, and it means nothing, and then they just leave, and it's nothing, and I don't understand why it's here.
The cannibals would have been so cool. Much better, because the dog could have come back too.
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
was it the last we saw that the dog was the leader of the cannibals?
No, we saw the dog again. Yeah. The dog was Keith Richards' dog, remember?
His
dad. Oh,
well, the dog should have come back in some way.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about there's a beetle in this movie for 2 minutes. Yeah, that
was
weird.
A very similar, like, that was just a cameo that they managed to get the schedules to work.
Yeah, because I remember we talked about it in the previous films or just when we were talking about these movies previously, and so I was expecting him to be, like, a character for 5 to 10 minutes, but no, he's there for about 30 seconds. It's weird. It doesn't fit. It's weird.
And it's weird that they had a conversation as Jack was, like, being led away, and it was like,
being carted away, yeah.
Why would they let him? Anyway, weird.
Yeah, it it's an odd scene, but you can tell they just wanted to do the cameo because it's funny to say that he's his uncle. That's why it's in there.
Yep.
So basically everyone makes it to the island at the same time, but the ghosts have to run away because they can't go on land. There's like a cool puzzle that they have to solve on this island. And they sort of reveal the trident by parting the sea, Moses style. And then there's a big fight down there with like possessed people and ghost people and alive people. It's very fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I don't know. It was good. It wasn't exceptional, this puzzle bit. Like, I don't know. It was all right.
So I'm just easily won over by puzzle shit. Like, you know, I play the Uncharted games. Like, I watch National Treasure and love it. Like, you just chuck in some people solving weird puzzles in ruins like this for me, and I'll just like it no matter how shitty it is.
Mm.
But didn't she just put that one crystal in that other crystal? Was there anything much else?
Yeah. It wasn't really a puzzle, was it? It was just plug in the thing that you've had that you've mentioned a few times into the bit where it clearly fits.
Yeah. Also, I was pretty amazed. Like, she was like, oh, it's an exact map of the sky. And I was like, you are looking at it from like 10 degrees. Like, it was amazing that she could pick that without a bird's eye view. It's like, no fucking way.
Maybe she is a witch. Maybe she actually is a witch.
She's like a really, really good woman of science.
She's memorized all the stars.
Yeah, from every angle.
So then, anyway, at the end of this fight, Henry shatters the trident. Salazar and his crew sort of turn human. And then there's like an exciting escape scene as this parted sea slowly closes, where the Black Pearl gets sailed right up and like drops its anchor so they can climb up the anchor out of the
water. Oh, so cool.
It's really cool. And they're all like climbing, and Salazar manages to get on. And something we forgot to mention earlier in the movie, they revealed that Karina is Barbossa's daughter.
Oh, yeah. We forgot about that. Because it was really shitty. Yeah,
just as she figures this out, he sacrifices himself to save her.
Yeah. And he gets this because his whole thing has been about preserving all of his treasure from Salazar. And then I can't remember who says, like, oh, what do you, who, oh, that's right, sorry. Just before he's about to sacrifice himself, Karina kind of recognizes that he is her dad. And she, to verify, says, who am I to you? And Barbossa's response before he sacrifices himself is, treasure. And then he jumps off, and it's kind of—I mean, it landed for me. I'll be honest, but it was quite corny.
I think it only works because Jeffrey Rush made it work somehow. He just says it in the way that made you go, "Oh, that's so nice."
Yeah.
Well, and because he'd sort of established that he was searching for, or he wanted to save his treasure, like that was why he teamed up with Salazar.
Well, I mean, he didn't say that to Karina, so that him saying that was for us really in the audience, confused. Not for him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, that's a weird thing to say. but then Salazar, like, he jumps off, stabs Salazar, him and Salazar go falling. And Salazar's death, his head, like, clunks on the bottom of this anchor, and it's really real, and it really was too real for me in this cartoon movie.
it was kind of like Saruman's death in the Return of the King, like, in the extended one, where he just goes onto that big spike. It was like that. You're like, oh shit, they really, they put the whole sound in there and everything. They really went for it. It's
just a bit too realistic for this film, for my taste.
Little Disney film. Yeah, that was a good scene.
Yeah. So leaving this great action set piece, there's just basically a bunch of reunions. Will's curse has been broken because all curses are broken, I guess.
All ocean-based curses have been broken.
Yeah. Which, sure. Anyway, so then, yeah, and then this is where Elizabeth shows up.
Before we do this, to go back to the scene where they break the trident, it's just so silly to me because there's this bit where they're trying to figure out, like, because they got this brief riddle that says something like, when the staff is divided, all the curses shall be lifted, or something like that. And it takes them about 10 minutes to figure out that just means they just have to break the staff.
Yeah.
Like, it's not complicated. And they're like, the staff is divided. What? Divide? What? Oh, break the staff. And you're like, I mean, come on. You didn't have to spell it out to that level for us. We got it.
You know what would be a great like plot for the next movie would be to just have like that. I mean, this in this world, like the world they've set up, if you took away every single ocean-based curse, it feels like it would just be chaos.
That'd be
I'm feeling like a sort of Fantastic Beast type thing where like all these beasts get out and there's just the whole movie really could have and should have been just about chasing the beasts. And it's like, that's what it feels like. The whole next movie could just be them dealing with the consequences of every single curse ever placed with relation to the ocean suddenly being broken.
Georgia, did you forget to watch the after credits scene again?
I did.
That explains why you're so...
That explains the after credits scene. Sorry, I just got why.
Oh my god, I'm surrounded by idiots.
Could I write Pirates of the Caribbean? Is that what you're telling me? Did I get it right?
Okay, we'll get there in a sec. Basically, for the after credits scene, Davy Jones is standing over Will and Elizabeth in bed. Yeah. And then as they wake up, he disappears.
But wait, can you explain this to me, Elliot? Why does the curses being broken mean Davy Jones comes back?
I have no idea. That's movie six's job to explain. Yeah. But like, it's sort of believable. Like, it's to the point where you're like, okay, yeah, those could be related.
Yeah.
Well, that makes about as much sense as anything else in this movie, Elliot. I'll give you that.
I guess the other thing, I thought of this separately. What would be funny is it actually has nothing to do with the trident being broken. What if it's just he got released when Jack gave away the compass to? It's just he was further away, so he took him longer to get him.
He's like, more scared of Davy Jones. So it took a little longer.
That would be so good. It's like Jack was also equally very scared of Davy Jones coming back. No, so that like, also happened, but he was just reincarnated a very long way away. That's very
It's not that he was equally afraid, but like, what if it was just, all the ghost people from my past would come back? Like if Jack's fear was actually that his past would catch up to him, then that would count Salazar and Davy Jones. Like, that's actually...
It'd be so shitty, though.
it would feel so weak if the sixth movie was like, yes, he actually was released. He was just further away.
Do you remember the exposition we established in the last film? We're just going to reuse that, okay? Do you remember that really bad explanation from the last film?
Imagine if Davy Jones just showed up for the climax of this film because of that as well. It would have been clunky, but I wouldn't have given a shit. It would have been so awesome.
Yeah, I would have given a shit. That would have been bad.
Can I say, I forgot the whole point Henry was looking for this trident. So Henry, his whole motivation is to free his dad from the Flying Dutchman curse. And when they break the trident, they go off and it's Henry and Karina and they're off on an island. And I'm like, oh, this is nice. This is a good, happy ending. And I was expecting the movie to end. And then Will shows up and I was like, wait, has it been 10 years already? What's going on? And then it clicked for me that was Henry's whole motivation, which maybe means I'm just an idiot. But I choose to believe what it actually means is Henry's character motivation of wanting to free his father was not really mentioned after the first 5 minutes of this movie.
This is true. I really thought for a second there that they hadn't managed to get Keira Knightley. Like, I really thought that it was just going to end there and we were all just going to have to assume that they were reunited. And then she turned up. I was like, oh, okay, there she is.
And yeah, it was so weird that she wasn't in it. Like, it was so clunky that she just wasn't in it till right at this end part for like 5 seconds.
You could tell that it was like she didn't want to come back for this. She doesn't have any spoken lines like she didn't want to be back to do this. And also, as further evidence that neither her nor Orlando Bloom really wanted to be back, Jack never has any interaction with them. I was kind of expecting Jack to have at least some, like at least he would wave to them or something. But no, there's nothing. That he just kind of sails off and they never acknowledge.
He looks at them through a telescope for a little bit and goes, ew, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Which is weird because they were such a trio in the first three. It's weird that he literally just...
Yeah.
Had nothing has, to do with has, them.
Does not give a shit.
Scheduling issues.
Yeah, like it has to be something like that.
Yeah, I've got to go back to the thing of Karina being Barbosa's daughter. It just felt so. It felt contrived. So Star Wars to me. It was
it totally was.
Why couldn't we just have this chick? Like, why did she have to be somebody's daughter? It was so just stupid and unnecessary.
Yeah, it was confusing to me as well because she mentioned her the journal that she got and that it was Galileo Galilei's journal and had a connection to her father. So for a while, I thought her dad was Galileo Galilei.
Yeah.
And then when we got the Barbosa as her dad stuff, I was just kind of confused for a bit. It was really clunkily handled.
I didn't want to think of, like, she's, like, idealized this father figure as being, like, a man of science and all this kind of stuff. And then it turns out Barbosa just, like, stole that book in some kind of raid and just thought it looked neat and so just kind of left it with it because there was a big ruby on it. I did like that. And she took it really seriously.
I actually think there's, like, some really cool stuff in here. Like, I think it actually works. It's just clunkily executed. So by the time you find out that Barbosa is her dad, you're a bit like, really? Like, these two people who are on a boat together, it just turns out that's his daughter. I don't know. I think there's a lot of cool stuff for both characters in there. It just doesn't come together right.
Yeah. Going back to the Star Wars comparison again, there was that moment at the end where, you know, he sort of says something to her and she goes, Barbosa. My name is Barbosa. I was like, that was just like Rey saying she's a Skywalker in the last Star Wars movie. It's really weird.
I didn't connect to them.
A lot of Star Wars connections with this chick.
It really genuinely is just that exact same scene. And it lands as much of a brick as that scene did.
Can I just get in one really nitpicky complaint? And
sure.
This is just not even a real complaint, but like, Henry needs to be more, like, show-offy about the fact that his dad is, like, in charge of all the dead people in the sea.
Yeah, like, he weirdly never brings it up.
I feel like none of the movies really give that the weight that it deserves. Yeah. Like, this person is essentially Karen or, like, the Grim Reaper, right? Like, responsible for ferrying the dead to the next world. And it's just kind of treated like it's a... I don't know. It never is given the
heft. Like, it's very inconvenient because he can't go and land every 10 years is sort of how it's treated.
Is the main thing about it, yeah.
I'm just thinking from, like, Henry's perspective. Like, it's just, like, when you get captured on a ship, it's just like, motherfuckers, I'll sink this ship and my dad will make sure I'm okay and you'll all be fucked. Like, I don't know. Use it.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. So I guess that's everything. Touching all the reunions, it looks like Henry and Karina are going to stay together, so that's nice. Oh,
thank God. You know, that was the main drama that we were all invested in this movie, so thank God
I hope Barbosa comes back. He didn't have a sure death. They left it nice and vague. I mean, it's already
happened. He literally died in the first film and then he came back, so, you know, nothing's off the table.
Because he just kind of really ambiguously sort of fell into some water, so...
Mm.
He could 100% come back, which I hope he does. He's my favourite character.
Sorry, Georgia, but all curses in sea have been broken. So, unless he's the first new one.
Well, no, so his original curse
He just
fell into
some water. He could have just literally swam back onto the island. Like,
well, he was originally cursed.
To swim like 40 kilometres home.
He was originally cursed.
That far out.
That other island sunk.
Oh, did it? Oh, I missed that.
And it was like a desert island. All it had on it was a picture of space.
You can eat crystals.
Elliot, curses are different to coming back from the dead. That's a different thing.
That's a blessing of anything.
All he has to do is find an upside down ship and turn it the right way up and then he'll come back.
He just has to find some sea turtles.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, fuck, that would be so funny if Pirate 6 just had Barbosa and they had you get here and he just said sea turtles.
Mate. Now, that is a lazy explanation that I could get behind. That would be very funny.
Yeah, because at least it's a reference.
Yeah.
And it implies there is a real story. He's not telling
it. I have my ways.
What do you think the role of that bald witch was originally going to be? I bet she was going to be more of a character originally in the film.
She was a really cool character design. She looked so awesome.
Yeah, they put so much effort into her for someone who was in it for, like, 2 minutes altogether. I feel like she was probably just going to be Tia Dharma 2.0 if they'd given her the time.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get Pirates 6. We'll see. I'm actually a little nervous. I kind of don't want them to bring Davy Jones back because
they would ruin
I don't
it.
Want them to ruin yeah. it.
I'd love them to do it if they did it well.
I think, I weirdly think these movies have been such clear failures that I think they would only reboot it if they have some actual shit, you know? Like, no one's going to want to do a Pirates movie unless it actually has good shit. Like, the Margot Robbie spin-off, I think, has some cool ideas. and that's why they're doing it. Pirate 6, I don't know if it will ever happen, but if it does, it will only happen because somebody's going to have some actual ideas that they want to do.
I mean, people probably said the same thing about Pirates 5 after the fourth one, you know?
Yeah, maybe you're right.
I want you to be right, but this one, I think, was like the worst film, and it still made like 3 times its budget back, you know? So it's like still financially viable.
Mm.
We'll see. Just do a Pirates movie centered around Pintel and Rigetti. Bring our two boys back.
Oh my God, the two, again, can I just say, the two stand-ins that they have for Pintel and Rigetti, who are the two soldiers that have been in previous films, they are just atrocious in this. Like, it really clunked.
Yeah, they're like Barbossa's chumps.
I mean, it is just meant to be Pintel and Rigetti, but they seemingly couldn't get them to come back, would be my guess.
So I suppose that's all we have to say about Pirates 5, The Adventures of Scrum.
Oh, yeah, he's in it too. God.
We didn't talk about the fact this movie has a different title in different countries, and I don't understand why. But in the US, it's called Dead Men Tell No Tales, whereas in, like, Australia and I think most of Europe, it's just called Salazar's Revenge.
Mm.
Yeah.
Why?
Is Dead Men Tell No Tales too close to Dead Man's Chest?
I mean, it is. That was a good call. I'm just wondering why they were
there. Oh, yeah. Fuck, I forgot the other part of this where one of Salazar's first things that he says to Henry is, "Dead men tell no tales." And they keep working it in again and again, like it's not the clunkiest phrasing ever.
I think the worst one was one point where he says something like, "Oh, something because now the dead man's tale has been told," or something. I was like, yeah, oh, come it's on. Like,
so clunky.
We get it.
Hell. Yeah, so that's Pirates 5, 10 out of 10. Can't wait for the sixth one.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I guess it's time for the outro, unless anybody has anything else they want to talk about.
Nah.
I mean, I'm not just limiting this to Pirates 5. We could talk about Ace Lightning.
Oh, yeah.
talk about, like, Loki, I don't know.
I closed the wiki page for Ace Lightning, so I don't have any other fun wiki facts.
Okay, wait, I have a fun fact. Sorry, I just realized I had a tab open and I forgot about this. Guess who the previous owner of the Trident of Poseidon was before it was, like, trading places in this movie?
Poseidon.
Like, guess who owned it before it got put in its current cage?
The dog.
Incorrect.
Jack the monkey.
Is it a character close that we know from the movie?
What do you mean, yes, close? Jack the monkey is close.
Jack the monkey is close.
What other animals are
there? Is it an animal?
Is it an animal?
No.
Oh, my God.
Is it a mineral?
I have...
Is it...
is it man-made?
The previous wielder was Jack Sparrow.
What? What do you mean?
So, when? Jack Sparrow used it to... See, okay, because one of the benefits of the Trident is that it can control all mermen and merwomen.
What do you mean one of the benefits? What are you talking about?
And so there was an evil dictator who was controlling all of the mermaids except for the blue mermaids who are immune. And Jack worked with the blue mermaids to steal the Trident. He was benevolent to the mermaids and gave it back to them, and they locked it in here.
Elliot,
and this is all covered in some prequel novels that were released in, like, 2008.
I was about to say, where is this garbage from?
You've accidentally gone onto the Pirates of the Caribbean fanfic again, I think.
No, yeah. No. This is the proper Pirates wiki. So the crazy thing is, this, like, book was written in 2008, which is, like, just after the third movie came out.
What?
So apparently, like, 10 years later, they used the material from this book. Wow.
We were too hard on this film. It was much more planned out than I thought.
I'm just amazed that the canon of the Poseidon's Trident actually still makes sense given a book that was released 10 years before this movie.
It seems weird, but remember Jack was like, oh, that's not true. That's just a myth. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. Georgia, don't think about it too hard.
Oh, no, yeah, like, I'm a woman crazy of science. I like to, like, draw
reading
conclusions.
Reading this story about how it controls certain types of mermaids is just fucking weird.
This is weird.
Like, yeah, the Blue Tails strike a deal with Captain Torrance in which he would guard the Trident and share sovereignty over the mer people with them. However, once the sisters had handed control of the Trident to Torrance, he swiftly made off with it, bent on retaining control of the Seven Seas for himself. Anyway. So Anyway, so yeah, thanks for listening to this. Thanks for being patrons. It means a lot. We couldn't make this show or any of our other serious shows without the support of you giving us money to, you know, keep this stuff hosted and everything.
Sorry, just one more thing. Here's the quote when Henry
Rupin, I asked like four times.
I know. But now I'm on the page for the Trident of Poseidon, Elliot. Here is the quote from when Henry and Karina are figuring out that they have to break the Trident, okay? Because what they got, here's what they got, this phrase. To release the power of the sea, all must divide. So here's the conversation between them. Power of the sea. What? The power of the sea. To release the power of the sea, all must divide. If the Trident holds all the power, then every curse is held inside. It doesn't make any sense. What are you talking about?
But if the curses are held inside, then breaking it would release them? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't know.
Perhaps this will help clear things up. The manufacturer of the Trident was three Cyclopses.
That does help. So they were clearly idiots and the rhyme is nonsense.
Made by Poseidon.
No, Poseidon did own it for a time, but it was given to him by three Cyclopses.
Is this also
from the prequel novel?
Yeah, oh yeah, of course.
They must have intentionally made a riddle that didn't make sense so that nobody would ever really figure it out. Like, they didn't want people to figure it out, so they just made a shitty riddle. That tracks to me.
Do Cyclopses live in the ocean? Not really.
Well, no, they could have been aquatic Cyclops. Georgia, Cyclopses can swim.
I guess. It's just not anything that they're traditionally, like, associated with.
Well, I'm sorry they don't conform to your narrow image of what they should do and not do.
I was thinking of that guy from Invincible now. That's all like a picture. Cyclopses live in space, right?
That's
their thing.
Okay. So, outro? Outro?
Sure.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll be back next month. We're going to be talking about the Scooby-Doo movie before we get cracking on our next like proper series. So... I'm very much looking forward to this one.
Which Scooby-Doo movie, Elliot?
The like live action one from like 20 years.
The Monster Island. Is that what it's called?
Ooh, something like that. Because there was a sequel, which we're not planning to watch.
No, this is becoming our interlude standard. We only watched Angry Birds 2, we're only watching Scooby-Doo 1. We watch half of Jewel series.
Wait, the film was directed from a screenplay written by James Gunn?
Yeah.
Fuck me. Oh, and this also filmed in and around Queensland, presumably around the Gold Coast.
Yeah, I'll talk about it a lot next month, but the Scooby-Doo ride at Movie World on the Gold Coast was very formative for me.
All right.
So, yeah, we'll be back to talk about, Scooby-Doo the movie from 2002 next month. See you then.
Bye, hoy, listeners.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right, quick, Georgia, just do it, and I'll put us all together. Okay. Bye, hoy, listeners.
Bye, hoy, listeners.
Bye, hoy. We'll be right back.